Well, first, I would like to thank the committee for inviting me, though I'm not entirely sure why. And I would like to thank Yakir for updating our chess relationship. And what I'm here in an unofficial capacity. I work for the Navy, but I'm just being here because I was invited to do things officially. You have to get permission, and so I'm just here as whatever.
You're on vacation.
I'm on vacation. That's good. Yes, I'm on vacation. And when I told someone I was on vacation to go talk to a bunch of physicists for a week, they said, "Are you nuts?" Anyway, what I'm going to talk about today is essentially something I've been thinking about since I was introduced to the idea of weak values and weak measurements by Dan Parks, and then the 3 years Yakir was up in George Mason. We interacted a lot, and we learned a lot by going up and talking to him. So a lot of this is thinking about Dan and Scott Spence's thought more on the quantum end. I've thought more on the sensing end about some of the possible implications of this, largely into improving the way you can think about some sensing problems, but also some of the implications it might have for some stuff in quantum, specifically related to some of the stuff Alonzo talked about 2 days ago, and some other things about what is a good way to post-select if you know what kind of operator you're trying to measure. I'm going to discuss how an approach based on classical sensing that might, if you know what the operator is, how you could optimize the selection of that. Now, and how are we doing this? As I said, Yakir has sort of been in and out of my mind when I have time to think, and pacing up and down the hall, I argue with him, mostly in my head, so he's not responsible for any of this, but he has been my avatar. The other thing is I was always influenced by Dirac in the following sense that I always found his way of presenting things fascinating, and he liked to say that he liked to play with equations when he didn't understand with something. And I've been playing with what I would call the functional of a weak value for the on and off, thinking about different ways that you might interpret it. And so that's the extent of my introduction. Now, what I'm going to talk about is what I call the Aharonov-Ansatz. Now, the original paper by Albert Bateman and Yakir, I've read any number of times, and then I also read the follow-up paper by Duck and Sardashian. And that's really where I got the idea that this has something to do with sensing, not quantum sensing, but sensing. And so as I've thought about it over the years, the original paper influenced me some, but just talking to Yakir and Dan has influenced me a lot, that this is directly something, a way of thinking about sensing. So basically, there are four things of what I call the Aharonov-Ansatz. Whether or not Yakir thinks this is an ansatz, that he will tell us perhaps later on. Any sensor process, whether it's an active sensor means you send out some sort of signal, and a signal is something that's a function of time and has finite energy, that it will come back to you, and it will come back changed if it reflected off of something or otherwise interacted with something. And then that interaction can be represented as an operator. You can, if you have the capability of receiving this signal or detecting this signal, you can post-select or cross-correlate, it depends on what your language is, this return signal. And if you do it right, you can optimize for the measurement. In principle, it's always possible to maximize, at least theoretically, for the interaction if you know what the interaction operator is. And this is true classically and quantum mechanically. and optimization it will be discussed. What that means exactly, I'll talk about a little bit later. An ability to post-select for a given operator maximizes the ability to detect a signal. I'm convinced that's true whether you're doing normal signal processing or you're doing weak measurement with weak interactions. It varies a little bit, but there's an underlying optimality behind all of this. Now, radar can be thought about very simply. So can any kind of sensor. Radar is just a nice model to have for a sensor. Basically, what you do is you either send out a pulse or a continuous wave, and the interaction is it reflects or otherwise it hits something and it comes back at you. If you send it out and nothing comes back at you, there has been no interaction. Now, the kind of interactions you're looking for are of one of two types. Either something is coming, hits something, and after you know what time you sent it out, comes back at you, a delay amount of time equal to twice the range divided by the speed of light or the speed of propagation of the signal. The other possibility is you get it back at the same time, but if you send out a continuous wave like this, it will be Doppler shifted, and the Doppler shift will be proportional to the two times whatever the frequency is of what you broadcast it at, divided by the speed of propagation times one minus, frequency times one minus two V over C, where V is the velocity of whatever it is that's moving, or plus, depending on which it is. And these two facts enabled us, was one of the key reasons we won World War II. And when I say we, I mean Western civilization, with some heavy casualties, admittedly, but we won. That we were able to save, England was saved because they were able to detect the German bombers coming over to them and eventually able to knock them out in sufficient numbers that the Germans were able to take England out of the war. Similar things happened in the acoustic domain. And all of radar is based on this ability to say, something is coming back at me, I know approximately where it is, and so I can react to that. More complicated sensors are based on fine-tuning that concept, but it's either delay or Doppler shift. After the war, a guy named Woodward wrote a book in 1949 called Probability Theory, Radar and Information Theory, and it was the first real application of Bayes-type analysis to a real system. Now, Bayes' theorem is important, and indeed, Nicurius made an important contribution to it from the perspective of quantum mechanics, but Bayes' theorem in terms of a system where you're using Bayesian ideas to actually make equipment work better. Discussion of how to do it was in this book that was published after the war, and he talked about all of what the theoretical analysis that went into the British establishment about how they built their radars. I recommend it to anyone that's interested in classical sensing. Now, the other aspect of it that's found in this book is he talked about how do you design a receiver, which is something which you actually use to figure out you've got a signal, you've got some sort of information coming back to you. And to do that, you have to build an antenna that's roughly equivalent to what you use to send out the wave. How do you build that antenna and then the appropriate signal processing so that, in fact, you can detect things? Detect if there's a signal present or absent. And one of the theoretical tools he came up with is something called an ambiguity function. And basically, an ambiguity function is very much like a Wigner function. In fact, he was influenced by the idea of a Wigner function. So that if you have a given design for a broadcast signal, he will be able to use what's called a matched filter to tell you how to then either optimize either for range, if you want to measure range, or optimize jointly for both range and Doppler. And this has been the basis for designing radars for the last 60 years. The commonality with what I'm going to talk about is they thought the way they optimized it was in terms of range and Doppler, in terms of what it turned out to be the optimal design for this match filter so that you maximize the signal noise, was to design something that was essentially the time delay complex conjugate of whatever you broadcast, where you're doing the time delay appropriate to whatever sort of ranges you're scanning through. Well, if you think about that, that time delay, Yukira has talked about modular momentum, and that time delay is equivalent to the Yukira's operator acting on psi. That is, that psi of t plus tau, or psi of x plus tau, is equal to an operator acting on psi. And so knowing that got me thinking as to, well, there are other types of operators that we haven't been very good about measuring with certain sensors, but we think we know are present. What would we happen if we took this idea of post-selecting and started saying, what if we post-select for sensors based on the idea of post-selecting not for a delay, but for a more general idea, that of an operator? And so to do that, you have to go back and look at something that most engineers tend to avoid, but basically all of signals can be put in terms of the Hilbert space. And basically, for our purposes, all you need to know, it's finite energy, which means that this inner product is less than infinity. A Fourier transform exists, an inverse Fourier transform exists. Then you can define these sort of creatures I'm talking about and proceed forward. So we're talking about Hilbert space, whether we're talking about quantum mechanics or classical signal analysis. It's just there are some minor differences between the two Hilbert spaces, but there's enough similarity that over the years, radar and signal processing people have found out when something new is discussed in signal, particularly in reference to phase-based methods, that they find a mapping of it in signal processing. And there have been some things that signal processing people, that some physics people have mirrored in quantum mechanics, not always knowing they were mirroring something that already existed. So this is the simplest definition of an ambiguity function, is basically you consider two signals, one's the complex conjugate, and then you have a delay signal, and you describe it as this, then what they call the narrowband ambiguity function is this. And you can actually define a density too, and that's essentially this thing with omega equals zero. And you have normal autocorrelation things that essentially you can also interpret the ambiguity function as an autocorrelation of a signal with itself. But the more interesting thing, we'll get to in a minute. You can also, for our purposes, you can cast all this in terms of rho, which rho of a particular signal, you can define means, higher order moments, bandwidth, which is equivalent to standard deviation, expected frequencies, and for example, if you have an operator that is equal to I ddt, then you can always write the expected value of a function as the expected value of the operator acting on the signal. Likewise, if you want to know what the mean is of something, sometimes it's convenient to work in the frequency domain, sometimes it's convenient to work in the time domain. Now, time and frequency, there is no, can be treated, you can treat time as position, as you probably ran into in your most elementary modern physics undergraduate, usually sophomore level, and you can treat frequency with scaling as momentum. And the Fourier transform relationship between them is exactly like position of momentum. One of the differences in signal processing and quantum mechanics is, so you can cast things in those terms, but there's no evolution equation. Ah, there you are, Hogan. Well, and this is one of the problems about the analogy being perfect. There is no direct evolution equation. I think there actually is one, but it's a parametric one rather than a physical variable. And so with these operators, two very simple operators, and you cast things in polar form like Alonzo was talking about the other day, lo and behold, you can also express the expected value of a frequency as the phase derivative of the phase information and the ratio of the amplitude, derivative of the amplitude. This is exactly what you were talking about in other terms. And you can do this for all things. And so when he said that the instantaneous frequency usually contained most of the information, I would agree with him completely, because if you look at the polar form of a signal, this usually doesn't vary much. This is where the variation occurs. And so considerations of this operator, which is which is the Hermitian version of the delay operator, gives you all sorts of information about it, and you can talk about all sorts of interesting things about this. You can also do it with a frequency operator and do exactly the same thing. So here are some you're used to seeing these commutators. Well, you can define commutators for signals as well. All of these familiar. This in particular is one, except there's a missing H bar. The most interesting one is one where you defined an anti-commutator called the scale operator, which is the anti-commutator of the delay operators in the two different realms. And when that operates on a signal, what you end up getting is a scaled version of the time axis back. So this ends up being equivalent to the Doppler shift on the time scale and the amplitude shift associated with it, if you define sigma appropriately. And basically, the way radar people and other sensor people that use active sensors is they've gotten away with just considering these two operators and occasionally powers of them, and that's it, to try and figure out whatever's in their return signals. There's some additional things about it. You can also, this is something that you can also write the expected value of an operator this way. And this is actually another thing that I think we might have some common ground to talk about later, because this is actually quite interesting. This is called the instantaneous value of an operator. And when you look at you can talk about the instantaneous. You haven't done this in quantum mechanics, but I think you can use this in quantum mechanics too, and just talk about instantaneous operators. And again, you can write this in this way, and you can figure out what the where the information is for the phase in terms of this. You can do all sorts of funny things about this. And I started, actually, when I go home, I'm going to take your paper and apply this directly to what you're doing and see if we get the same results like I think we do. If it is, we have a connection. And the more interesting ambiguity function is what's called the wideband ambiguity function. And this is what it is. It assumes a bit more structure, where you have a scaling on the time axis like this. The thing about this is, if you look at this definition, then this part is the action of this operator. This part is the action of that operator. And so the net result is the combination of the two operators acting together, which is this. And when you're computing what they call the wideband ambiguity function, it really is just the expected value of these two operators. So if you were thinking about a signal that has more information in it, it's obviously going to be some additional operators with this operator. And any measurement when you're talking about either active sensors where you're broadcasting something or you're listening to something is going to be either you're trying to measure this or you've got this part and you're trying to figure out what this should be to get a better measurement. And so this is where I see the convergence of radars, active sensors, and quantum mechanics is this now is psi. I generally try to use psi when I'm talking about quantum mechanics and S when I'm not, is that we normally define this as what the expected value of an operator is this way. But we can define, based on the work of the last 25 years of Yakir, Albert, and Lev, this way. And so looking at this and looking at it where on the previous page where I had done this, then really what we want to do is talk about then to do the post-selection, one would replace that with something arbitrary and then figure out what under what conditions one would want to do that. So what have we learned from quantum mechanics? We've learned that a judicious choice of the post-selection, we'd like it to be some number mu, and we'd like this to be such that the ratio of this to this is much bigger than one. If that's the case, then we can define these type of things and perhaps with some editing improve selecting out one of these operators, which we're interested in knowing whether or not it's present, versus this, which if we got the signal back at all, we know is there if we're looking for additional information. So that's basically the story. Now there's some other interesting things you can do is about how to do this. You can define this instantaneous operator in general this way. You can do post expected value of an instantaneous operator. You can do the standard deviation or the bandwidth of it. And you can define two interesting things. You can define a bandwidth associated with the amplitude and a bandwidth associated with the phase. Post-selected as well, which is also apparently connected to your stuff too. And this actually has kind of an interesting thing. Property is the information contained in this, if you defined it relative to sigma, the sigma post-selection depth, the AM contribution and the FM contribution has to add up to one. And so this is sort of tells you something. If there's not much phase variation, probably most of it is there. If this is pretty constant, then most of your variation is there. And so calculating, trying to estimate for your particular problem which of these is relevant is actually a good way of saying where to invest my resources and how in terms of how to do something. And so there's one final thing before I go to the end. You would like to know, given you have operators and this type of stuff, is there a way to design something relative to these operators to maximize it? And the radar people solved this for the two operators I talked about earlier. They didn't know they solved it, but they solved it. If you actually take their original solution and try either one of these operators and then solve the problem, it's exactly what their solution is. It's the time delayed at the version, a complex conjugate of the time delayed version of the action of the operator acting on thing. So that suggests you can assume an operator can be written as a Hermitian operator. If you want to add constraints to it, you put this condition in, and lo and behold, after some work, you can show that you can get finally is what you want is a design for is basically this operator at a certain value plus the constraints. And so you can, in principle, you tell me the operator, and if we can do the calculation, and this is always a problem, calculation may not end up being precise. You can sort of figure out how to do post-selection based on this. Now, this is for scalar things. Real quickly, you can go through polarization and do the same thing. Oops, excuse me, I went the wrong way. You can also say define this as a post-selection thing where you're talking about vector fields, in this case, two-dimension. Anything can be put in terms of the Pauli matrices. And you can show for these Pauli matrices that, for example, this one post-selection doesn't give you anything, which you'd expect. But you can post-select for these other three for certain ratios of the transmitted and reflected fields and get the conditions exactly what it is. And if you remember the early days when they were doing this polarization, these angles are exactly consistent with that. And so you can, anything can be built up in terms of these. You can also do it for projection operators like these and show which ones work and which ones don't. And just as an example, you can always write a scattering object in terms of these projection operators. And this one is for something that's sort of shaped like this and then rotated around like this. And you can write it this way. You can find these sort of things in books that discuss polarization radars. And they're, because of the earlier work, you can talk about which shapes you're able to post-select for in terms of the operators the scattering object represents. Now, remote sensing is something that you do up at Chapman, and I think there are a lot of applications for this idea there. If you just remember this, instead of knowing what this is acting on something you broadcast, you know what this is on your return, or you have an idea what this is, and what you want to do is how to pre-select for something. And there, in general, polarization is coming onto its own in remote sensing, and some of these things results you're seeing about them discovering things that were buried for thousands of years because of polarization. I think this might improve it. And finally, you say, thank God, is there's one other thing, and this is where the quantum mechanics comes back in. Perturbation theory. This is called the variational functional, and we have, you use this either to estimate when you can't solve a problem, you use that to solve for the lowest energy state, estimate the bound for it. You also can use that for other types of perturbation theory. But the thing about this is this is a functional equation. Why can't we talk about measurement really being, at least think about measurement being a functional equation? And given a different set of constraints, how we want to estimate this is based on what conditions we want to impose on it. If you just say this has to be a minimum, then what happens is you end up with phi and psi being equal to each other, provided that the operator is the complex conjugate. It's a Hermitian transpose. So if this is a Hermitian operator, you minimize this and you get the Schrodinger equation. You can also use other things like set the constraint that these are normalized, but this is equal to epsilon. I think you're going to recover something like a weak measurement from that. There are other possibilities too. There are a lot of possibilities. And there are a variety of ways you can think about, if you think about post-selection as a way of defining measurement, then it leaves open a lot of questions that are worth considering. And finally, just as an aside, I didn't think I'd never encountered post-selection until I started talking to you and Dan. Actually, undergraduate, I was bored, so I took a summer graduate course from Landau and Lipschitz. I was looking at something on the functionals the other day and realized that Schrodinger's equation can be attained by the variational principle, and by he considered psi star arbitrary, and that's just post-selection. He did, but he had never heard, but my guess is he had never seen it, finally. So here we are, any questions? Now, this cat is asking a question.
He's hungry.
No, this is sitting outside the window. This is an eagle, which is about yay big. And he's thinking, that's too big. It might think me, you know, the first question that occurs when two animal species encounter each other is, can I eat it? Can it eat me? Or can we have conjugal relations? He was thinking, that may not work for any of those. So. And thank you, James, for letting me use your computer.
Questions?
Yes.
Were you able to communicate with the man and find out what he thinks?
Well, he and I have a special relationship. Yeah. Ever since we entangled ourselves by trying the Schrodinger cat experiment, we've been in close communication at all times. And he told now has told me to tell you his name is Seymour. And you're welcome to come visit him sometime. Yes. Justin.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that I think your connection to match filtering theory is very deep because, as you point out, it's been developed for decades and decades in engineering communities, and it rarely enters the physics curriculum. Engineering departments know about it, physics doesn't, but they've developed a lot of these techniques that are readily available to use and figure out what they mean in a different context. So I'm glad to see that there's now some merger of the disciplines happening here.
Thank you.
I have a question. So your pre and post selection in this setting would be in terms of polarization, I guess. And yeah. The object would be some sort of a, you know, like a catalyst to mix up the translational and
yes,
polarization degrees of freedom.
Yes.
Okay. And you had this equality between these two noises, right? The AM and the FM.
Those aren't noises. Those are just the instantaneous, the real part of the imaginary part of the instantaneous operators.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, I didn't discuss noise because I figured noise would be in another 20 minutes. I've actually done some noise analysis. And it's very interesting to talk about what happens to the polarization operators when you subject it to standard noise considerations. That post-selection actually does something very interesting. And some other time, perhaps, we will be able to talk about it. I've talked to Jeff a little bit about it, but I haven't been able, hadn't talked. Maybe we'll figure out a way to talk about it. The people that are nodding, that know who, anyway. But I would like to talk to you about the yes, instantaneous sir. Operator relative to your work. Thank you. Where's Lucian? Isn't he supposed to be giving the next talk?
Sure. I think we have
no, you have coverage.
Oh, excuse me. My mistake.